With Jeannie Yandel, I'm Ross Reynolds. This is The Record. Since the landslide in Oso last Saturday, the number of missing people has fluctuated dramatically. Soon after the landslide, officials estimated 108 people were missing. That number climbed to 176. Then on a Wednesday, officials dropped the number of missing people down to 90. It's a number officials say they worked hard to reach. That number won't help locate missing people. Names will. But officials are not ready to make those names public yet, even though at least one official wants to. Here's Snohomish County Emergency Management Director John Pennington at a press briefing last night.
Why can we not release the names of the 90 unaccounted for missing individuals? If I need to understand legally if we can do that or not. I think that that's a question we should ask. And if we are able to release that, then my call as the director would be that we begin the process of looking at the sensitivities, but maybe doing that and helping to solve the puzzles of where some of these individuals may be.
Releasing the names might seem obvious, but it's not so obvious. Joel Reidenberger thinks a lot about the repercussions of releasing names of missing people. He teaches law at Princeton and Fordham universities. He co-authored a report on privacy and missing persons after natural disasters. I spoke with Reidenberger earlier today and asked him what factors officials need to consider before publicizing the names of people missing from the landslide.
Well, the officials are going to have to weigh the importance of releasing the names to be able to provide emergency services to those potential victims. I say potential because we don't know yet whether they were victims. So they've got to consider that. What's the benefit to the victim? What are the potential risks of publicly releasing that a particular individual was thought to be in this area at that time? And what's the risk that the names on the list may cause further confusion and further distress to the families unnecessarily?
How can emergency officials go wrong by releasing too much or too little?
Well, there are lots of issues that come up with names that are put on a list following a natural disaster. There may be individuals who are included because family members think they might have been in the area, and others in the family would, for example, not have known that, so it can cause undue alarm. There may be individuals who are affected by a disaster whose name is on a list, but whose identity, for important reasons, is being kept confidential. A battered spouse, for example, who has a protection order against an abusive partner. It can be very tricky to determine when and how to release names that are on a victim's, potential victim's list. It turns out to be a pretty complex problem, to be frank about it, because you have to be able to identify what do you count as a missing person, who, what level of verification would the organization that's maintaining the list have to do? What's the privacy policy? You need to think through the different interests of people at stake. So it isn't just the victim who has privacy interests, but also the individual who's reporting someone missing. The relationship between the individual reporting someone missing could be very sensitive. Suppose the reporting individual was not the spouse, but happened to be with the person when the disaster happens. They know that they haven't seen the person, but it could be a very sensitive family matter if it's revealed that a non-spouse was with that individual at the time the disaster struck.
Is there a commonly accepted protocol now for keeping names private or making them public? Or are people doing this on an ad hoc basis?
Right now, it's sadly very often being done on an ad hoc basis. Our research center at Fordham a year and a half ago prepared a roadmap for privacy issues dealing with missing persons after natural disasters. And one of the recommendations that we made was that organizations, disaster relief organizations, should really be thinking in advance about what their protocols will be. Some of the large organizations, the American Red Cross, the National Library of Medicine, have procedures for large-scale disasters. The situation that's occurred in Washington, it is not on the same scale as an earthquake where hundreds of thousands of people or an entire city may be affected.
At the peak, 170 people were reported missing, which is certainly a horribly large number, but not as large as we've seen in many other disasters where they would go into the thousands. Is the small, relatively small scale of this, does that make it any easier to come up with decisions about how to release names?
The smaller scale of it will probably make it much easier to ascertain whether there are compelling privacy interests at stake for the individuals on the list. So, for example, the small scale makes it easy to find out, are any of those names subject to protective orders? I mean, that would be the classic example. If you have 100,000 people, it's a lot harder to comb through 100,000 people and try to determine whether some of those individuals' identities are being protected for various legal reasons. If it's a smaller number of people, it's easier to vet.
That's Joel Reidenberg, an expert on privacy law. He teaches law at Fordham and Princeton universities. This is The Record on KUOW Seattle.